This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up, Brad Thomas from NBC Sports and Goal Boys will join us. We will talk some NFL, some college football, get his thoughts. I think he's got some Olympic bets. Just talk about his process for getting ready for a football season and some of his thoughts on some of these teams, overrated, underrated awards. So getting closer, a few days away from the Hall of Fame game, a few weeks away from college football starting. So we are about to turn the calendar to August. That also means trade deadline. We've gotten some trades in the last couple days. I'm recording this early on Sunday. I'm actually headed up to Fenway to watch the god-awful Yankees take on the Red Sox. They actually had a big win Saturday night. We'll see, by the time you listen to this, we'll see if they have backed that up and won another game on Sunday, a game they desperately needed Saturday. That was an awful loss on Friday after Judge. It's about as long a home run as I've ever seen in Fenway, outside of like maybe McGuire in the home run derby. Judge hit a ball where nobody hits a ball in Fenway. And I think it was David Cone and Girardi who were doing the game. Like, man, I've seen a lot of games here. Never seen a ball hit in that spot. And Wells hits a homer. They take a three-run lead, and they still blow out. Holmes was awful, but they bounce back. They win Saturday. We'll see what Sunday holds, as they will be in Philly Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in what is a big series. Philly's the best team in the sport. Yankees have all sorts of issues right now. So we'll see if that was a turning point, or if they just goes back to continuing here for the Yankees. And I mentioned some of the trades. Arozarena got traded Thursday. I don't think we were on the news after we did our show. It was like late Thursday night into Friday morning. Arozarena, the Rays outfielder, goes to the Mariners. Just some little deals on the margin here. The Orioles make a move for a reliever, Dominguez, and they get Eflin from the Rays. They got Dominguez from the Phillies, which is weird. You don't usually see trades among contenders like that with a Phillies Orioles trade, where both teams and Philly and the Orioles, by the way, have all sorts of issues too. These teams have mirrored the struggles of one another. The Yankees, I don't know, it's just because they're more marquee or they're in second place, but the Orioles have struggled just as much as the Yankees. So they make a couple trades. Kimbrel's been bad for them. It's funny, the parallels of not only being hot at the same time, being cold at the same time, but also issues with the closer, as Kimbrel blew a game Friday, almost blew a game Thursday in the game they led 6-0. So they get some help there. We'll see if they move Kimbrel out of the bullpen spot. Mets trade for Jesse Winkler, outfielder from the Nationals. They've also gotten a couple of relievers here along the way. Yankees get Jazz Chisholm, the kind of do everything. He's a jack of all trades, master of none type of player, where he can play all over the place. He's okay at everything. He's not great at anything. He can run a little bit. He's got a little power. I saw he's got 13 homers, but I saw one of the spray charts where if you played at Yankee Stadium, he'd have 19 homers. So I don't know where you play him. He's third base is the real hole with LeMahieu, and they've got plenty of holes, but I don't think they'll put him at second and like move Torres around. So maybe outfield, maybe until Stanton comes back. And Stanton looks like it's going to be back. He's going to be back Monday. Jason Dominguez, the star minor league outfielder, is back in the minors, so you figure he might come up at some point. So I don't know what they do with Chisholm, and I don't think he's far from the last move. They're going to need a reliever or two, and they're going to need probably still another bat. So there's at least some hope for the Yankees where, hey, Stanton and maybe Dominguez and Chisholm, and you trade for one more bat and a couple relievers, and the hope is a week from now you have a team that looks completely different than the team that struggled for the last 6 weeks. So that's the trade deadline. Just some little moves here and there. I would expect some more. I don't know if we're getting the big move, the Crochet, the Tarik Skubal. Those guys are just so young and so good. Unless you're going to blow them away, I don't know why you trade those guys. And Baltimore already trading for Eflin, the pitcher from Tampa, like I mentioned, I think sort of mutes their need for a pitcher. If you're going to trade for a pitcher, you probably would have just used all those prospects to get Crochet. I don't see them trading for Eflin and for Crochet. So a couple days away from the deadline. Some fun series this week, highlighted by Yankees, Phillies. We will keep an eye on that. Quickly, before we get to Brad, some football. Tua Tagovailoa, the Dolphins quarterback, and Jordan Love, the Packers quarterback, signed monster deals. And look, this is just the way it is. They're the new highest paid guys. The highest paid guy is always the most recent guy to sign the contract. I get that, and I understand, hey, if you have a guy, or if you even think you have a guy, you pay him, and you just pay him what the market says to pay him, and there's really not a lot of negotiation. Boy, I'd be very hesitant. Love, it's only 1 year and really half a good year. I know he's young, and he looked really good at times, especially against the Cowboys in the playoff game. Wasn't great against San Fran, too. Horrible pick to end the game. It's just one pick, but it wasn't that long ago. It was the end of the season where he lost to the Giants in that bad Monday night game where he got pressure on him. They got pressure on him, and he didn't look like know, an effective player, and he wasn't good the first half of the year, that would just make me nervous, giving him all that money based off one good season, a half a good season. I know he looks the part, but that would make me nervous in the 201. And I don't, you're going to ask me, hey, what's the alternative? And I don't have a great answer, but paying him with his injury history, with his limitations outdoors in the cold, the way he struggles outside when everything's not perfect, boy, there are some issues. And then the off the field of the concussions, I know he was healthy last year, but that has not been the norm. He has been just one concussion after another, one injury after another. That is very, very risky. Again, I don't know what the better option is. I don't know if there was another option other than just, hey, letting him play out. And then you figure it out at the end of the year, which isn't a great option. But my goodness, that's a lot of money for a player that's as limited and fraught with risk as Tua is. So, I mean, I get it. I would just, both of those would make me really nervous, especially the 2-1, especially 2-1. If you're Miami, well, you better get home field advantage, because if you, all the teams you're competing against, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Bengals, the Ravens, all the teams, they're all cold weather teams, the Jets even, and you can throw them in the mix at least for this year. If you have to go there for a playoff game, you're dead with Tua, unless you get like a mild 45 degree day with no wind and it's not that bad. And it's just, you happen to hit a January day where the weather's tame, which isn't likely, but it's possible. You're done. He's not going to win a playoff game outside against a good defense in bad weather and cold and wind. That's just, it's not going to happen. So you have a player who, when he's on, when he's not being rushed, when he's not in bad weather, when everything's perfect, yeah, he certainly looks the part. And he led the league in passing yards last year, so it's not like he's a bad player. It's just, boy, everything has to be perfect. Otherwise, things go off the rails. So that's the football I would expect Dak to sign somewhat soon now. He's going to make more than these guys. Purdy's probably going to make more than these. I mean, it's just going to be, Mahomes and some of these other guys look cheap now compared to what some of these guys are getting. So coming up, we will talk to Brad Thomas about some football, some NFL, some college. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him, NBC Sports Network, Go Boys. He joins us again, Brad Thomas. Brad, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, I'm in a pretty happy mood, right? Like, we have golf going on, Olympics going on. We're starting to kind of get ready for the NFL and college football season. So while we might not feel like we have a ton of sports to bet on, we actually have more than I could probably handle on a day-to-day basis.
Days away from NFL preseason starting, weeks away from college football starting. I like to ask my guests this: what is your process for getting ready? There's a lot to take in, especially if you're doing NFL and college, and especially with college, with the new transfer portals, teams switching conferences. Like, where do you start? What's your process like?
Yeah, so for NFL, it's vastly different than college football, obviously, because there's a lot fewer teams. For the NFL, I go through and I find bets or angles that I like for every single team. I guess I start with the basis of what I do is I look at acquisitions and departures. Those are my most important things. See if teams have anybody, especially like on the offensive line or defensive line, that left the team or joined the team that could impact them overall. From there, I'll go and I'll see like what their win total is, what Vegas projecting them in the Super Bowl. And I'll start thinking of bets in the futures market. And why I go specifically to betting first, as opposed to just ranking the teams, is because it kind of gives me a starting point, or also gives me a point where Vegas might be disrespecting a team just based off my knowledge of them. From there, I'll go and I'll build a power rankings, and I'll power rank every single team. College football is way different, right? College football, I do that similar process, but you can only do it for really the power four. If you start to do that for every conference, you're going to run out of time. But for the smaller conferences, I'll knock off like three or four teams and start diving that way. For me, the most important thing about college football is knowing the personnel and knowing the expectations from that personnel. Basically, you'll see a lot in college football, the ceremonial senior start. That happens so often where you'll have this senior start game one, or they'll start game one and not play the rest of the game after two series. Then you want to start seeing, who are those up-and-coming players? Are those up-and-coming players that are going to be behind them, are they impact players? We saw that with the two-headed monster of Nick Singleton and Catron Allen at Penn State, right? I can't even remember who was it. Lee was the starting running back, and then these two came in. Imagine if other teams don't make that transition, right? You have these great running backs in the wings, waiting in the wings, but you're so stubborn, you keep giving this senior guy the leader, the senior leader, these reps, it actually hurts your team in the long run. So I like to do that for every single team, because these incumbents really make the difference. Or if you like have a Texas, you have a quarterback in Quinn Ewers who is supposedly going to take that next step, right? Those are the things that you really have to target, and you have to know that for every single team. It also helps you in the long term during the season. Let's say a guy goes down. Who's that next man up? I know the pundits, the ESPN personalities talk about it all the time. A lot of what they do is just kind of speculation, right? Like Archie Manning is going to be a better backup quarterback than Ty Simpson. Those kind of things you don't know for sure, but it is good to start kind of building your opinion for when things go awry, or if a guy kind of takes over that job, a la the Penn State running backs.
What do you think of this new format, the college football playoff? What is it, 12 teams now, and then we're going to expand after that? Is there going to be, I don't know, good betting opportunities to make miss the playoffs? This is the first time the books have had to price it, and just your general thought as a fan, as a bettor of all these teams making the playoffs now?
I'll say this. As a Bama guy, I've had the privilege of, you know, kind of being the shoe-in for the college football playoffs, right? I actually hate it, but not from what everyone would expect. I actually think knowing you cannot lose a game, or if you lose one game, you're going to have to make up for it down the road and make the playoffs, that matters so much. It's going to kind of dilute the importance of some of these really big games. Like a 3-5, you can lose that now. You can lose that, and then you can also lose another ranked game down the road and still be a shoe-in for the playoffs, which ultimately dilutes it. I hope the product we get is going to be worth it, right? Because if Liberty goes and plays in Athens, they get beat by 45, and that's going to happen so frequently. But people have this thirst for more games, and we will get the occasional upset, like once every 5 years, once every 10 years, in my opinion, just like in college basketball, where the parity got greater, and now 16s are occasionally beating one seeds. But we're going to see a lot of blowouts, a lot of kind of wasted games.
Yeah, and yeah, that, like you said, when Oregon plays Ohio State October 12th, it'll be awesome. It'll be fun to watch, but I mean,
won't matter.
It's not going to really matter that much. It'll matter for like buys and stuff, so it'll matter. But yeah, I mean, you're going to be in a situation where like Michigan, Ohio State in some years where, hey, that game means everything in a lot of years.
Yeah,
might be in a position where Michigan, Ohio State, they have a rematch the next week, and then they play a third time in the college football playoff. So it'll definitely be different. There will be pluses and minuses, but definitely going to some getting used to. What's your favorite bet in college football right now? Anybody you think is overrated, underrated in terms of a team?
First I'll go overrated. And this is, I say this with a grain of salt, right? I say Texas is overrated, and I don't even know their odds to win the SEC. I'd imagine they're probably like plus 300. Let's take a guess here. Oh my God, right on the number. Plus 300. The way that the media talks about Texas, they act like Texas is a plus 150 favorite to win the SEC, and they're just handing Texas the title. My problem with that is, and this is going to sound biased, it's going to sound cliche, but this is the first time Texas is playing an SEC schedule. As much as you want to say Texas can run with the big boys, we haven't seen them play the schedule week in and week out. They struggled in a lot of games, especially in the season, where they'd have those back-to-backs of challenging games, or they'd be coming off the heels of a really tough game, then they'd play like a Houston and squeak out a victory. And it happens. I just don't think in season one of being in the SEC, they're just going to run the SEC like a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, and they were so good defending the run. They were so big up front last year. They lost a lot of that. I think you could throw it on them. We'll see. I think it was Brad Powers on maybe a month or so ago, and Texas under was one of his favorites. Now, at 10.5, you have to lay some juice. At 10, you want to push on them. You have to weigh those things. Hey, do I want to lay 10 at a fair price, or 10.5 and just lay the juice? But yeah, with that schedule, especially if you think Michigan is live to beat them, boy, it's going to be hard to go through that schedule unblemished and not lose two or three games.
Yeah, for sure. Underrated. That underrated one's pretty hard for me. I think just naturally, I don't like a lot of teams. It's easier to eliminate teams in college football than it is to kind of buy them. For me, it's going to be Penn State underrated. They did lose a little on the defensive side, but they're still going to be strong defensively. And we talk about James Franklin as being an awful coach, right? Like, sure. He's awful in comparison to a guy who's always loaded with talent and can't win the big games. But when you're starting to get a team like a Penn State who has the defense, they have a good running game, and then they have a quarterback who has the ability to take that next step in Alar. If that happens at 25 or 28, whatever their number is to win the national championship, they're more alive than people believe. Like the price difference in an Ole Miss and a Penn State is almost $20. Like you're getting like double the value to take a Penn State as you are an Ole Miss, and all either team has to do is get into the playoffs. We know Jackson Dart's good. We know that Ole Miss team is going to be good. But if Penn State is the second team in the Big Ten, or they win the Big Ten, like, they're in. Alar takes that next step, they're in. It's a chip in a chair mentality. And we're talking about underrated. I think their price should be closer to 16-1.
Where are you at with Ole Miss? Do you buy the hype? A lot of people say, hey, this is a playoff team. They're actually favored to make the playoffs. You think they're legit? Obviously, a lot of skill on offense. You think they get a little better on defense with the transfer portal? Where are you at here with Kiffin's team?
Yeah, not to echo what Nick Saban said, but I actually agree wholeheartedly with what he said. They are finally, for once, they are big and strong up front. Offensive line's bigger. Defensive line's bigger. That's actually kind of bring me to something I didn't say earlier in the segment that I think is important for college football bettors. Size matters in the trenches in college football. If you don't know much about two teams, you honestly can go look at their offensive line average size, look at their defensive line average size, and compare the two teams. You're going to see a lot of times these smaller offense and defensive lines get bullied around. That's what was happening to Ole Miss kind of quite frequently, but the transfer portal kind of helped them out, get bigger, get stronger. I think that helps them. I wouldn't bet them 15-1 to win the national championship. I'm not that big of a believer in Jackson Dart's throwing ability. Yeah, this team will be better, but I don't know how much better.
Anything for Heisman you like? I feel like the numbers, we talk about this with NFL MVP a lot, where you used to get some really juicy numbers on guys that were live at like 70-80-1. Burrow was 200-1 the year he won it. Now, Duggan was 100-1 a couple years ago, and he finished second. So you can dig through it and I guess find some value, but all of the prices look right to me. There doesn't look anything that's great. How about you? Anything like, hey, if I had a $100 free bet, I'd use it on this guy.
Definitely not Dylan Gabriel. When's the last time a favorites won the Heisman? Bryce Young. But when Bryce Young won the Heisman, he was like a plus 850 favorite, right? It wasn't like some books have Dylan Gabriel listed at plus 500, which is absolutely insane. If I had a free bet and I could put it on anybody, man, I would go. We need a team that's going to win a lot. We need a team that has the ability to, we need a player that has the ability to kind of just go absolutely insane. I'd go Cam Ward, 22-1. I was on him. I think that number has actually come down quite a bit since the beginning of these odds being out. I think it was closer to 30 or 40-1. But Cam Ward, I was on him at Washington State. He was live to win the Heisman for about 6 weeks, right? If Miami can get their shit together, win the ACC, and he puts up a big season at 22-1, I think it's a pretty solid price.
How about your Bama team? DeBoer's a tremendous coach. It's impossible to replace Saban, but he's such a good coach on offense, such a good coach. Just as an underdog, always overachieves. How many wins are they live for the SEC? Are they a playoff team? What are your thoughts here on Bama, your alma mater?
Playoff team. Schedule's not terrible. They luckily get Georgia at home. I think they'll be better than a lot of people expect. My biggest issue with them is going to be the secondary. A lot of new pieces. Furthermore, a lot of new pieces playing a new defensive scheme. And I think that kind of hurts them a little bit there. So I'm high on them, but not high as I would want to be. Learning that swarm defense is going to be tough. And obviously you have all offseason to do it. That offense is going to be nice. Actually, let's talk about this for a second. So I went to the spring game and my favorite thing to do when I go to football games like that, where I'm kind of with my family, I like to kind of guess the formation, guess the play when they're in formation, or at least see what kind of package they're going to run out, what principle they're going to be in. I was actually shocked for a lot of the kind of bases that we were in and what we ended up running off it. So like, let's kick it back to like the Lane Kiffin days, like back when Lane Kiffin was coordinator, they ran a lot of packages off like the screens, right? They would use screens. They'd use fake screens, a lot of that. What I noticed with this Alabama team, we haven't had something like that since Kiffin, is we were running a lot of jet motion. And it was jet motion into plays. Like, obviously, you have your jet motion into power, jet motion into zones. Those are cool. They did jet motion into a tight end screen. And I think that's going to open up the passing game a lot more, because under Tommy Reese, and no offense, under Tommy Reese, it was just very cut and dry. When you're in 12 personnel, you're either running the ball or throwing the ball to the tight end. When you're using jet motion, that brings in – that now you're – essentially opening up the RPO, that brings in a different dynamic for the defense. They don't know Jalen Mills is going to throw the ball. they don't know that Jalen Miller is going to play action. They don't know that Jalen Miller is going to run the ball. I think that it allows them to be more competitive with a quarterback who might not be the best thrower of the football in those short to intermediate. But I will say this, Jalen Milroe's throwing motion has changed. It's shortened. He shortened his release. It looks better. And when you have a coach like DeBoer, I think his big brains, the big brains of DeBoer, I think that he will kind of be able to mask those inefficiencies. And Bama's going to have speed, a lot of speed. They haven't had speed since the Waddle days. And that's not that far along, but just think about the wide receivers that Bryce Young was throwing to, you know?
Yeah, that definitely, it was a diminished offense last year. It wasn't, I think they were like 30-something in the country in yards per play, which is a pretty straightforward stat. And it's like, man, this is a Bama team that used to just be, you know, 6-7 deep receiver, pros everywhere, receiver, offensive line, backs. And last year it was just like a good offense, but nothing special, and especially by their standards. Yeah, I agree. Look, it's going to be weird. Saban not on that sideline is going to be weird, but you get them at 9-1 or so, shop around 10-1 to win the SEC when you get Georgia at home. I don't know. Not a terrible bet. What NFL teams you're high on, low on before we get some other stuff?
I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be opposite of Mad Dog here. I'm going to be low on the Jets. And this is not low on the Jets thing. I think the Jets are going to stink. I just think that financially, we've probably missed the number on the Jets. I think they're, 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. I think we've missed that number. I think that they are one injury away from being horrible. Now, if everything goes right, great. But when I think about the Jets, what was their biggest issue last year outside of not having Aaron Rodgers? Their offensive line was bad. They brought in two new offensive linemen. We don't know what that looks like. We don't know what that offensive line, if it takes that next step. I don't care if they bring in these. I don't care how good Aaron Rodgers is. Unless the Jets take the next step on the offensive line, he's one hit away from them derailing their entire season because their defense is only going to hold up for so long.
That's my team this year. So you and I are opposite, I believe, but I certainly
what understand. What number did you get
him at? I took the division. I think it was 200. I think the Bills have a very tough schedule. They play every Bills team that was in the conference title. Every team that was in the conference title game last year. So Ravens, Chiefs, Lions, 49ers, they get obviously two against the Jets, two against the Dolphins. They play.
I took Bills team total under wins. I don't remember what that number is. It's in the NBC Sports magazine. That was one of my best bets.
Yeah, and it's a tough schedule. Allen seems to give you a very high floor. Hey, he's so good, even though he's never won MVP or won a Super Bowl. He's so good, he's probably going to get you to 10 or so wins anyway. But boy, that's a tough schedule. And I mean, he's been healthy, but if you miss him for 3 or 4 games, he's a running quarterback that's older. If you end up missing him for 3 or 4 games, that under is certainly cashing. How about a team you think is underrated?
Underrated, man, this is fun. Team that is underrated. I'm going to go with this is so hard because what do we talk about? Underrated in price, underrated in, I say team that's underrated. I'm going to go, and it's not price driven. I just think that they're not getting talked about enough. And I think I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Kirk Cousins goes to Atlanta, and I'm guilty of this as well. So I want to just put that out there. When Kirk Cousins first went to Atlanta, I was all over the Atlanta Falcons to win the division because I get a good price, right? Like I get that price right when the news breaks. But as the dust settles, as people hammer that down to the negative numbers, you look at the Buccaneers at +320 to win the division. This is a team that returns their quarterback. This is a team that has a guaranteed 1,000-yard receiver in Mike Evans. They have a healthy Chris Godwin. They have a running game. And I actually think bringing Cohen in makes this team better. And no disrespect to Canales, but we have to remember, let's not talk about Cohen with the Rams because that was the Rams team with, no Cooper Kupp and Baker Mayfield was his quarterback. When he was at Kentucky, Kentucky was, I think, third in the nation in yards per play. It was the first time in forever Kentucky was, top five in points per game. And that was Cohen calling the offense. I think that he'll be able to kind of breathe some life into this. And you know that defense is going to be good. That defensive line is somehow getting younger, but still kind of maintaining their skill. So I think we kind of have to be, realistic or honest and say, we should really start considering – the +320s, +350s on the Bucks to win their division.
All right, that's interesting. Hadn't thought about one. That's one that's completely wide open. At Aaron Schatz on the other day. He like the Saints. He think the Saints are being slept. I can't argue when you, if you're going to tell me who's going to win the South. I can't argue with anybody. To me, it's so wide open. These teams are all sort of just mediocre in whatever way the ball bounces. So that's one where I don't mind taking a shot on, whoever you like. Last one. You mentioned Olympics going on. Any Olympic bets? Olympic thoughts as you get ready here for football.
Yeah, so I've been kind of just looking at the Olympics men's soccer. And before anybody gets like kind of super excited about this, or I don't know if that's the right word, you have to remember this is U23. Players over the age of 23 cannot play, with the exception of three overage players. I think that you should probably consider the numbers are quite different now, obviously, since they've played one game. But I think you should stay away from the Argentina. Argentina has a lot of Boca Junior players, a lot of players who play in the Argentinian league. I think that because they won the World Cup, people are just going to naturally gravitate to that name. Stay away from the United States. Like the United States, their underage players aren't senior players, which means like they're not like on the bigger team, and they don't play for really big squads domestically. People might say they looked good against France despite losing 3-0. False. I'd say you're going to want to bet Spain probably at the price 2-1, maybe 150, depending on what happens at the weekend. Spain's deep, very deep. They have players who play on big clubs. The France team obviously is the clear favorite and their rightful favorite. They have the good fortune of having really good players who are starters on really big clubs, and they're not over 23. So they're not the overage players like Michael Olise, Mateta, like guys like that, Kone. These are guys who probably could play on their actual team. And so that means that allows them to bring in veterans in the back line, which helps defensively. So I think that you can find a lot of good action here. Also, I would say first half unders are probably going to be really good in this Olympics for soccer.
Brad, appreciate the time, man. It was fun. Hopefully we'll do this again during the season or sometime soon. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Absolutely. You can find me on X at Mr. Brad Thomas. Speaking of soccer, NBCSports.com, I will be starting my Premier League Futures Series, which has a bet on all the premium teams, those top big name teams, and the newcomers. Gives you a little background and some bets to place on them.
Brad, appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Brad Thomas. Be back Wednesday. And by the time we talk, we will be one day away from NFL preseason starting. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Wednesday.